from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. That's Another Day of Sun from the musical film La La Land. The movie claimed several Oscars last night, including one for Best Score, and for a few chaotic moments seemed to have captured the Best Picture award as well, until, following a historic envelope mix-up, Moonlight emerged as the true winner. We'll discuss the films, the performances, and the art and politics of the Academy Awards with a panel of film critics, all coming up next on Forum after the news. It called me to be on that screen and live inside each scene. Without a nickel to my name, hopped a bus, here I came. I could be brave or just insane. We'll have to see. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Last night's Academy Awards ceremony contained a few surprises, not least of which was the revelation midway through its producers' acceptance speeches that film musical La La Land had been mistakenly awarded the Oscar for Best Picture. That honor went, in fact, to Moonlight, a coming-of-age story about race and poverty held by critics as an almost unbearably personal film and an urgent social document. The award comes as the Academy struggles to cope with problems of diversity and inclusion following last year's Oscars So White controversy, and we discussed last night's winners, and also Rans, and the art and politics of the Oscars ceremony. Let me tell you who is joining us for this hour. We want to welcome, first of all, here in studio, Sura Wood, who is a freelance arts journalist and film critic and who has been with us before on Forum. Her work has appeared in a variety of publications, including Hollywood Reporter, San Francisco Arts Monthly, and the San Jose Mercury News. And welcome, Sura.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We also have Tim Gray with us. He's features awards editor for the Variety, and we welcome him back to the Forum program. Tim, good to have you.
Oh, nice to be here. Thank you.
And thank you. And Claudia Puig is with us as well, president of Los Angeles Film Critics Association, joining us from L.A. Good morning, Claudia Puig.
Good morning.
Let me begin, Claudia Puig, with you, and let's talk about what certainly has gotten the headlines, the big mess in terms of the wrong. This is, I mean, if you can't trust PricewaterhouseCooper, who can you trust? But what do we know about this screw-up now? Just the fact that Beatty and Faye Dunaway were handed the wrong envelope?
Yes.
It's that simple?
There are two people standing on the stage from Pricewaterhouse, and there's always two, a set of two for every category. So there's two envelopes, and they were handed the wrong one. And you can see it when you go back and replay it. You can see that Warren Beatty is holding something that says leading actress, best leading actress. So that's what he was holding. That's why he hesitated. You could see it on his face. You could see the awkwardness. And apparently he just handed it to Faye Dunaway, and she saw the word La La Land and read it out.
Yeah, Beatty saw Emma Stone La La Land and handed it off to Faye Dunaway.
And then she said La La Land.
Yeah.
I think she just didn't want the long gap and didn't understand what was going on, and she just saw the words La La Land and said that. And so it wasn't their fault, obviously. It was somebody who's yet to be determined either at Pricewaterhouse or on the stage. But Pricewaterhouse has, released a statement and said that they were very sorry. I kept thinking about La La Land's alternate universe ending, the actual movie, and I thought, how meta is this? There's an alternate universe in the movie itself, and here's the alternate universe ending at the Oscars. But
And you couldn't help remembering the moment with Steve Harvey. A lot of tweeting went on about that, where he announced Miss Universe as being Miss Columbia, and then it turned out he was wrong, supposedly, and it was Miss Philippines. And that was also a kind of infamous incident, which some said may have been a PR stunt to boost the number of people who were watching the Miss Universe. On the other hand, I think this was a real Hollywood surprise ending. Let's listen to last night's already infamous Best Picture blunder. Here's La La Land producer Jordan Horowitz interrupting the cast and the producer's celebration, who explained that the film had, in fact, not won Best Picture.
No, there's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Moonlight won. Come on, this is not a joke.
This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture. Moonlight, Best Picture.
Okay, there it is. And Sura Wood, from your perspective, deservedly Best Picture for Moonlight.
Yeah, I thought that. I really loved that film. I thought, you know, particularly for its exceptional tenderness and its depiction of this tremendous isolation and these kids and, you know, people that we just don't see, you know, poor black gay kids on screen from, you know, the projects in Liberty City in Florida. And I think it also got something that was even bigger than the gay context of the story, which is what it's like to be a kid. And this is a situation that so many kids are in, no matter what their economic situation might be, where they don't feel like they have a real home or a place to go. I thought that film really nailed that. And it really reminded me, I thought it was a bit of a throwback to the good old days of indies before the Sundance Labs took over and independent film became a pet and a revenue source for the industry. There's kind of a raw, the first screening that I went to of it, the sound really wasn't that good. And it didn't matter. There was such beauty there.
Tim Gray, a very different sense of diversity last night, almost the antithesis from last year's Oscars. I'm interested in, because you talk a lot about campaigning and, in fact, have written a good deal about all the campaigning that goes on. Emma Stone apparently, not that she didn't deserve the award, but doing an extraordinary amount of campaigning for the Oscar. How much campaigning went on really to ensure that this would not be another white-only, shall we say, event?
I mean, there's always a lot of campaigning that goes on. I think in terms of diversity, I think it's a little bit of the luck of the draw, because the four movies that were nominated this year, Fences, Moonlight, and Hidden Figures, and Loving, they're really great works. And I think if any of them had opened in 2015, well, those people would have been nominated, and the Oscars So White debate might not have gotten started, because it's like, okay, they're in there. But I'm glad the debate did get started, because I do see Hollywood people rethinking, and it's like, you know what, maybe we are doing it wrong. But I think it's a little bit the luck of the draw, because, you know, there are four really good diverse films this year. Plus, you have Lion set in India, and the best foreign language winner last year, The Salesman. That comes closest to kind of being a political statement. It's a good film, but the fact that the Iranian film won, you think, okay, that has like a double meaning aside from just the quality.
No, yeah, well, there was Hidden Figures, and Loving, though, didn't get much in the way of awards. And there's always the argument that you mentioned Lion, but in terms of diversity beyond African American or beyond black, you didn't see much diversity, really, did we?
No, I mean, you know, as I said, the conversation got started more this past year. But you know, I've written columns saying, you know, when we're talking about diversity, we're not just talking about actors, and we're not just talking about blacks. We're talking about Latinos, Hispanics, talking about Asians, people with disabilities. And those things are still not coming up enough in the conversation. But, you know, hopefully it will keep happening, and that Hollywood hopefully has a little bit of a raised consciousness about this.
Well, speaking of raised consciousness, Claudia Puig, let me go back to you, because we can always talk about the Oscars as a would-be art form or as a kind of entertainment or both. There's often that dichotomy. But last night, once again, as expected, we did hear some politicizing, and I suppose the main one came from the award that was, or the statement that was read by the Iranian director of the film, The Salesman.
Yes, and I think that was very much expected. And, you know, in all of these cases, we're talking about diversity, but these are the movies that really deserve to win. It's not like, you know, we're not talking about reverse discrimination, or we're not talking about throwing a bone out here. I mean, Moonlight, I agree, it was absolutely the best picture. It is one of the best pictures in a very long time. And The Salesman, you know, they're all good, but The Salesman, I thought, was the best of the foreign language films. So, you know, it worked out that the best picture won, and the best picture also was making a political statement, or at least through Oscar Farhadi not attending, that was a strong political statement too. So I think the outcome was actually really great. I mean, it really, you know, when you think about the Oscars So White and some of the other issues that have come up, you couldn't have, I mean, you might have had a couple categories be different, but for the most part, I think you really had a lot of very diverse pictures rise to the top, and you had some great speeches. I think certainly the one that Asghar Farhadi made through his the spokesperson when he said, "My absence is out of respect for the people of my country and those of the other six nations who've been disrespected by the inhumane law that bans entry of immigrants to the U.S. I mean, I think that's extremely strong, and I think, you know, most of the audience agreed.
And there were, of course, the predictable remarks about Donald Trump from Jimmy Kimmel, joking about the remarks that were made by Meryl Streep and the remarks that followed by tweeting from Donald Trump. I'd like you to hear a clip from Moonlight. That is, in this clip, and again, it's the Best Picture winner. It wasn't La La Land, in case you tuned in at a different time. It was Moonlight. The character Juan, played by Mahershala Ali, who won Best Supporting Actor for the role, by the way, tells a story from his childhood to a young, I want to make sure I pronounce this right, it's Chiron, the film's central character. Let's listen.
This one time, I run by this old lady. I was running, hollering, cutting a fool, boy. This old lady, she stopped me. She said, "Running around, catching a boy that light. In moonlight, black boys look blue. You blue. That's what I gonna call you. Blue.
Say your name, Blue."
Nah. At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
Well, you know, I'm looking at some comments that came in, Sir Wood. We asked our listeners on social media to complete this thought. The 2017 Oscars were, Debbie says, worth watching live. Lou writes, a joke. Helena says, the most entertaining I can remember. And then there was the ending, unsettling. And another listener by the name of Eli says, politically correct.
Huh. Gosh, I don't know if I mean, the comments are all over the place. I mean, it's a huge audience, and I thought it was kind of pretty much right down the middle. I mean, most of the actors, I mean, I'm trying to think if this is a fair statement. I don't think it was as aggressive as I thought it might be. I mean, Gael Garcia Bernal made a comment about the wall. There really wasn't anything comparable to the Meryl Streep speech, which was very moving and got under the skin of you-know-who. But I want to speak a little bit to so that issue about whether it's really diverse or it's just kind of an lucky accident that so many people won. I want to do a little shout out for the power of speaking up and making your voice heard. You know, in other areas of our society right now, we have people out demonstrating and yelling and trying to be heard. And I'd like to think that it makes a difference. And I have to think that it made some difference this year with the Academy members. Maybe my colleagues here in Los Angeles might have a better sense of this. But I thought I'd read that they did admit more diverse members to the Academy, which has skewed older and white. That may have had some impact on this, too. I don't know if it's worked for women speaking up so much. They're still a disproportionately small percentage of directors, for instance.
Well, one thing that struck me was I thought Viola Davis was terrific in Fences and happens to be a play that I've taught and dealt with through the years. And I thought her performance was sterling. But she was Best Supporting Actor as opposed to, being nominated for, almost ensured her victory, I think.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of strange when you think about that, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Claudia.
Claudia, go ahead. Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I think that clearly it was a lead actress role. And, that's the thing that studios do. It's all this kind of gaming and sort of, let's try to ensure that we get a win. So, they probably saw the Emma Stone juggernaut coming up and they thought, we'll position her here to make sure. It becomes this very strategic game, which is too bad because she deserved the best actress win, not the best supporting actress win.
It becomes even more strategic because of the voting for 10, you know, and rank voting. That almost hastens strategy.
Yes, and yeah, there's only been one other African-American best actress win. That was Halle Berry, yeah. So it would have been great to see a second one. But you knew she was going to give a fantastic speech and all of that, which she did. I kind of wish all that stuff, you know, there's no way to avoid the campaigning and the gaming and all that stuff, but it is unfortunate to see that happen.
I was struck, though, by a couple of things. Let me go to Tim Gray on this. I was struck by a couple of things that were odd in the whole picture and show not only the rise of Netflix and Showtime and HBO and all the rest, but there was a poll and only 60% of Americans knew any film that was nominated for Best Picture. And none of the films, and I'm talking about all 10 of them now, made $100 million. And in the old days, that was almost standard bullion for big films. Tim?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think as the studios have gotten more and more corporate, there's a greater divide between what the audience is liking and what the Oscar voters are liking. Because if you look at the top 10 movies of this past year, it's movies like Star Wars and Finding Dory and Captain America. And, you know, and the voters aren't going for that. You know, a long time ago, I mean, seriously, in the 30s, like Mae West movies were voted for Best Picture. And, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, I mean, there's a lot of well-known popular movies that are in the Oscar race. And I think the last really big one was The Lord of the Rings, that won in 2003. And there is more of a divide. I mean, Hidden Figures and La La Landers are proving pretty popular at the box office. I mean, I think La La Land has $340 million, which is a lot. But it's nowhere near the $1 billion that the top movies are getting. So there's a discrepancy, and I think audiences, TV audiences, are losing a little interest in watching the Oscars because they've never heard of these movies. And I think the Academy people are quietly a little worried about that erosion of viewers.
I was fascinated by, since you're talking about the history of the Oscars, reading your piece about comments that were made going back to 1948 by Raymond Chandler. Give us a little bit of that background. I mean, there's always protest and always criticism of the Oscars, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Raymond Chandler wrote an essay and saying, you know, Oscars aren't won; they're hawked, they're promoted, they're sold. And he concluded with, you know, well, I guess if we can do that with the president, I guess it's okay to do it with films. But you know, it always is a little funny because, you know, people are concerned about campaigning, and it's like, is it drawing too much attention to too few films? But in a way, that's what the studios do. I mean, they don't open Star Wars and say, God, I hope people realize we're opening tomorrow. You know, let's just cross our fingers. It's like they promote it endlessly. And so they kind of do the same thing with awards. They promote them. I do think ultimately voters vote for what they think is best. I don't think you can force somebody to vote for something that they didn't like. And the fact that Moonlight won, it's like, okay, clearly people like this film, but I would love to see the results because, as you pointed out, you know, the Academy invited more than 600 new members this year. And it's like, I'd love to see how, and a lot of them were overseas people. I'd love to see how they voted, but, you know, we'll never know.
Well, La La Land, as you said, was certainly the big winner at the box office this year and got 14 nominations. That was the most that any film had received other than All About Eve and Titanic. And here's a song, City of Stars from La La Land. It won the Oscar for Best Original Song last night. Let's hear.
City of Stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? Is this the start of something wonderful new? Or one more dream?
How's that song stack up in your mind, Claudia Puig? I mean, in terms of former Oscar-winning songs, I like Horowitz's work a lot, but that song doesn't seem necessarily to be, well, one that you would remember, I guess, to a great degree, or that would endure in your memory?
Actually, I think it can be a bit of an earworm of a song because it is so simple, but I wouldn't say it's, you know, the greatest song of all time, but, you know, best songs oftentimes are not. Can you say what won last year or the year before that? I can't. I mean, you know, generally there aren't that many great songs that come out of films. You might find a great score, but I think in general an individual song is kind of unusual. And then, of course, in the case of a film that is a musical like this, it was probably a foregone conclusion that it was going to win, or at least one of the two songs nominated from La La Land were going to win. It's an okay song.
It's a pedestrian song. That that connotes to me. I wondered, though, Claudia, what did you think about, we talked about, you know, the entertainment element. There was a lot of candy coming down from the sky. There was all kinds of stuff. And there was also Jimmy Kimmel with political comments. Remember, we're being watched by more than 225 countries and they hate us. But also all that ongoing joke feud stuff with Matt Damon. What's the entertainment quotient of all that, do you think?
I actually thought it worked pretty well. Jimmy Kimmel was not necessarily my favorite comedian. I think as an edgy comedian, I prefer Chris Rock or, you know, some of the other folks that have hosted. But I thought he kind of struck just the right note for something that is as mainstream and as broad. He certainly, you know, that comment about being hated by 225 countries was a great comment. And then the Meryl Streep stuff about her being overrated, I thought that was kind of clever the way he did that, and the jokes about Trump's tweets. I thought it worked pretty well. And the Matt Damon stuff, you know, Matt Damon is so engaging and likable, so that worked fine. I'm not as crazy about the tour bus thing. It was felt a little awkward, a little bit of like almost noblesse oblige. Look at those commoners and look how the rich and famous are, you know, being kind to them. But overall, I think he struck a pretty, you know, kind of gently political, gently satiric note. And what I was really struck by was, you know, several winners mentioned empathy, about empathy in films. And I think that the whole show really kind of, you know, encapsulated that empathy in a very lovely way, and especially in contrast to kind of all the anger and divisiveness and you know, hate that's going on in the country right now. The idea that Jordan Horowitz, the La La Land producer, was as gracious as he was, and then Barry Jenkins back at him, and then backstage, you know, Emma Stone saying Moonlight was one of the best pictures of all time. I feel like there was a lot of graciousness and expansiveness and generosity that was
on that great. Note of expansiveness and generosity, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're coming up on a break here, and you're hearing, of course, Moonlight theme in the background here as we go into the break. You can join us, and I invite you to do that. Your thoughts about the Oscars. Toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That's toll-free for your calls, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We want to hear from you. Who do you think should have won, did win? Were you happy? Were you sad? Cross the board when we return. This is Forum. We're talking about last night's Oscars, who deserved an award, who got snubbed, what did you think of Jimmy Kimmel as host, and how, following last year's Oscars So White controversy, it's a hashtag, is Hollywood addressing what Academy President Cheryl Boone Isaacs called its frustrating diversity and inclusion problems. We have a panel of film critics here joining us to talk about the awards ceremony and the awards themselves, and if you didn't see them, you should probably be advised at least that Emma Stone won for La La Land as Best Actress, Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea for Best Actor, and Best Director Damien Chazelle for La La Land, Best Supporting Actress Viola Davis for Fences, Best Supporting Actor Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, and Best Original Screenplay Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea. Just a couple more here. Best Adapted Screenplay Barry Jenkins and Terrell Alvin McCraney for Moonlight. I was also noticing Best Film Editing and a few other awards for Hacksaw Ridge. Did we see the redemption of Mel Gibson last night, Sarah Wood?
I don't know. I don't know what his thing is with gore. The Man Loves Gore. Remember Apocalypto? I mean, it wasn't a terrible film, but it was barely watchable. I don't think it's capable of redemption, personally. But I'm sure he was.
Film won two awards. It was his film, pretty much. I mean, Andrew Garfield played the lead role, and it was, you know, a very moving film story about a medic who refused to fight in the war and deserved many medals that he got.
Yeah, well, like I said, redemption is a little too strong a word, in my view, for him. I think he's beyond hope.
Well, let me read some comments. Here's Carl, who tweets, the Oscars' potential political edge was nicely moderated by Jimmy Kimmel's performance as MC. It released a lot of steam and hot air. Moira writes, I was disappointed that the stunningly intelligent I Am Not Your Negro didn't win. Both a documentary and a narrative of James Baldwin's life, you're in the presence of an intellect of elegance and quicksilver precision whose frank observations cut to the heart of society's racial issues and made everyone I saw it rethink race. If ever there was a film we needed right now, this was it. It was an impressive film. But, you know, a lot of people are saying O.J.'s, the film about O.J. shouldn't have even been one of the nominees. Or,
well, it was odd in a way because it was originally, I mean, I saw it on ESPN, a sort of a multi-part, multi-hour project. It was screened for qualification for consideration for the Academy Awards in New York and L.A. But a lot of people thought of that it was more of a TV program. Nonetheless, I think it was, I'm not going to compare it to Moonlight, but to me it was one of the best, if not the best film accomplishment of the year. It was an incredible achievement. And just when you thought there was nothing more that could be said about O.J. Simpson, he really, Ezra Edelman really gave us a whole context of racism and life in L.A. and police brutality. There was a lot of stuff in that about O.J.'s life, you know, what was going on when he was at UCLA.
And a shout
was
out,
it USC or UCLA? Somebody's going to call and scream.
Well, it's just a shout out to Jeffrey Toobin, who didn't get recognition during the Golden Globes and who really deserved a lot of credit for bringing that whole thing to the screen in terms of the story. Like they were saying yesterday, screenplay, you know, in the Oscars when you're evaluating. Let me just read a few listener comments, then we'll go to your calls. Julia tweets, I was happily stunned by Moonlight's Best Picture win. I only wish Nicholas Britell had won the best score, so beautifully moving and vital. Kevin writes about portrayal of African Americans. Black actors can win as long as they stay in the tear-stained, subservient roles of the 50s and 60s. The minute a movie depicting a young couple, both black, neither crying for equality with white folks or peddling liberal ideas or examples of what good-hearted whites can do with just a little charity and tolerance, I'll stop blasting the Oscars. And another listener writes, I thought the Oscars were actually entertaining with the snacks falling from the ceiling and the bus tour group filing through. They were fun instead of cringeworthy, which these things tend to be. Let me go to your calls and let's begin. Carmen, with you. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to give a shout out to Aggie, who's the mom of Ben Slayton. I hope I'm saying his name right. Moonlight. He's the cinematographer. And she sent her boys to public schools. He's Caucasian, but he has a African-American brother. Also, I would like to imitate art. I subbed down in Daly City, and there was a kid that was being bullied, and I've known the kid since elementary, and this is a high school, so he complained, and no one did anything. So he wound up like in Moonlight in the movie, beating the crap out of the bully. And I think they voted him prom queen, but the mother was so traumatized that she decided to pull him out of school and homeschool him. So that's my plug for Moonlight. Anyone hasn't seen it, the cinematography is beautiful. And you forget about race. It's a change of life, not change of life, but coming of age story.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for that addendum of a review here. Tim Gray, I'm going to go back to you before I go to more callers or emailers, because, like I said, I was interested in what you had to say about statements that were made about the Oscars in the past. In the article you did, Tim is, again, features award editor for Variety. You were writing about John Gregory Dunn and Edward Norton and even Hitchcock back in 1972. Can you just go over some of those? Because I thought they were fascinating.
Well, yeah, Hitchcock said, I think it was in 1980. No, it was before that.
I think it was 72, you said in the article.
Yeah, 72. He said that somebody asked him about the Oscars, and he said, well, they should do it at least twice a year because it's always movies that open in the fourth quarter. He didn't use that phrase, but the last few months of the year, those are the ones that are always nominated.
September to December 21st, essentially, yeah.
Yeah. And this
big
year,
advantage.
I mean, I do think people are, the studios and distributors are so excited by that idea, they're overdoing it, because this past year, there were literally 15 movies that opened in 1 week in December. We, you know, most of them hoping for Oscar attention, and most of them didn't get Oscar attention because people didn't have time to see it. But yeah, the funny thing is, I wrote a column about Oscar campaigning, and I said, you know, it seems odd to people because, you know, you can, to have somebody say, please vote for me, I'm the best. I said, you know, you can't imagine somebody campaigning for a Nobel Prize or a Pulitzer. I got so many calls saying, are you kidding? You know, there's really heavy campaigning for those awards.
And yes, thought, there is.
I didn't know, yeah. Yeah. So I think it partly goes with the nature. It's hard to pick a best. You know, it's like going into a restaurant saying to the waiter, what's the best meal you have here? They say, well, I don't know, what do you want? Do you want chicken? Do you want fish? Do you want steak? They're all good. And that's kind of how I feel about a lot of the movies this year. You know, again, La La Land, Moonlight, Hacksaw Ridge, they're all really good at what they set out to do. So best is a little vague. So the campaigning, it's sometimes exhausting, but sometimes it's fascinating to watch.
Let me go back to Sarah Wood here. Actually, you were going to say something, Sarah?
Yeah, I was going to say that Damien Chazelle and Emma Stone were out here early. I'm in the San Francisco Film Critics Circle, and we did an event with them. Early on, they were out here pushing that film. So they've been on the road with it for a long time. I think they thought it would be an uphill fight for them.
Well, there is a lot of – I mean, when we interviewed DiCaprio the year before he won the Oscar, you know, he came on the air here and he was reluctant to do that sort of thing. But I think he had a new publicist who convinced him it was important to do. And we had an interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda. Which we didn't air because the sound was so lousy. But, yeah, he wanted the Oscar for the best song and so forth. I was going to ask you, though, Sarah, you were saying to some extent before we went on the air that you thought that Denzel Washington really may have deserved the Best Director's Award. And, boy, he had a sour look on his expression when he didn't get it.
I thought he was crying.
Was he?
I thought his eyes were tearing up.
It looked like he was just upset and angry. But, I mean, his performance, as you said, was extraordinary. I guess either you love the La La Land because it's a musical and you give Chazelle all that, right, you know, glory, or you say we're talking about real old school performances or directing jobs, yeah?
Well, it's sort of what Tim was getting at, too, is you have apples and oranges and you're asked to pick the best.
It's crazy,
out
yeah.
of it. From my mind, I know people really loved La La Land. To me, it just seemed a little tepid and kind of impressed with its own preciousness. And I didn't think the score was terrific, but it was easy to take, I think.
Well, here's a comment from a listener named Sander who says this is something to think about. In regards to the mix-up at the end, it might have seemed far more egregious had the two movies been in the reverse positions. By the way, you can add your voice here, what you liked or didn't like about the Oscars or what you felt about the performance of Jimmy Kimmel. We're talking about the political statements, the whole range of what went on last night. And if you happen to see them and you have some thoughts, by all means, join us. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. And speaking of La La Land, here's Nancy. Nancy, go ahead.
Hi. I thought La La Land was barely adequate, and most of the women my age, which is in the 70s, thought it was just ridiculous. And, you know, hadn't these people ever seen any really good musicals? And Emma Stone, this woman can't act. And the idea that Annette Bening in 20th Century Women was not nominated for Best Actress, I thought was just insane. And my favorite movie last year was the Beast movie, you know, and Where to Find Them. I thought that was just tremendously enjoyable. But I thought the show itself was fun. I enjoyed Jimmy Kimmel, and I hadn't seen Moonlight or Fences, so I can't say anything about them. But La La Land, I just don't get it.
Well, Nancy, you mentioned female leads, and of course there's the argument that I think is quite credible that there aren't enough female leads. But what about Claudia Puig? Let me go to you on this. What about Isabelle Huppert and Elle?
I think she's fantastic. I just wanted to say one thing about that last caller. I think that you know, she mentioned she hadn't seen Moonlight, and I think that is the case for most people, sadly. I'm a huge fan of Moonlight. And one of the plus things that will come out of this night is that who won this year will be burned in everyone's brain, in everyone's memory. And, you know, if Moonlight had just quietly won, people might want to see, but because it happened the way it happened, I think you might have more people actually going out to see it, which I think is the best thing that could happen because it's such a great movie. But back to your question about Isabelle Huppert, I think she's absolutely wonderful, and I would much prefer to see her win over Emma Stone. You know, her performance was fine. The character was not well developed, and I agree with Sarah. It was a pretty tepid movie. It was charming and, you know, a little kind of bobble, frothy, but certainly not, you know, a performance for the ages. I think Isabelle Huppert's performance in Elle was fantastic. I think her performance in Things to Come, which she wasn't nominated for, but which we at the LA Film Critics honored her for, was fantastic, and I think she's an amazing actress. I also would have liked to have seen Ruth Negga win, because I thought her performance was very quiet and subtle and loving. Mm-hmm. So Emma Stone was not my choice.
Did you see The Salesman, Claudia?
Yes, I did.
The Iranian film, and you did too, Sarah, and Tim, all of you? Yeah, so I'd like to hear you weigh in on it, because I saw the first film he did, which I thought was extraordinary, The Separation, The Divorce.
I think actually About Ellie was his first film, but it wasn't released here first, I think, Separation. Separation was an amazing
Separation
film.
Won the Oscar, it was amazing. I thought this was a very good film, maybe not quite as good as a Separation, but a fantastic film. And you know, he has a way of just delving into the human psyche in really fascinating ways, and he's just a very, very thoughtful, profound filmmaker. I think I'm very glad to see it win, although I also liked Land of Mine, which was a very different kind of film, but I was very happy to see The Salesman win.
He's sort of a marriage specialist.
Yeah, he is indeed.
Yes, he is.
But he also has to live in Iran, which may account for certain things that he does and the way he does them, including the last night's boycott. But here's a comment about Casey Affleck I'd like to have you all weigh in on. Adele writes, can you discuss Casey Affleck's controversial Oscar win given his history of sexual harassment allegations? Did he deserve to win? Did he even deserve to be nominated? The sexual harassment case was treated much differently than Nate Parker's.
You know, it's interesting with that, too. It looked like his momentum was slowing down for this award, and it was going towards Denzel. I think there were a lot of people betting on Denzel, not to take anything away from the quality of Denzel's performance, which I thought was transporting. But because of this, I guess Affleck settled these harassment allegations, but it really looked like it was going to hurt him. And boy, did the rape charges, which Nate Parker was acquitted of, really just kill A Birth of a Nation, I think.
Although I agree with you completely, but I would say The Birth of a Nation, having seen it, was also not really worthy. It was at best a mediocre film. It really wasn't up to the caliber of really some of the better films. If it had been a really, really great film, I would have felt a lot worse about what happened to him. But there is an interesting duality there. It did not, you know, it wasn't nearly as widely publicized, Casey Affleck's allegations, and of course they didn't go to trial. But Nate Parker was acquitted, so it is a complicated issue, and it's always a complicated issue to separate the person from their work. I mean, we're talking about Mel Gibson. That's another example of that.
Bill Cosby or Woody Allen, or, you know, the list goes on. Looking at a comment from a listener named William, it says, I thought the video montages of past winners was beautifully done, but then Casey tweets, the In Memoriam segment left out Gary Shandling. I'm wondering, Tim.
Oh, but that song! Oh my God, that song! I had to turn the sound off.
Clouds from Both Sides. Now I didn't even know what the appropriateness was of that. I couldn't figure that out to save my life. But Tim, I'll go to you on this. What about the doubling up that they had? You know, they had Javier Bardem, for example, and he was influenced by Meryl Streep, and so they came out together. It was a way of introducing people. Shirley MacLaine coming out with Charlize Theron. What's your take on that, Tim?
Well, I mean, I like the idea. I kind of wish the Oscars had more film clips, actually. You know, they present 24 awards in 3 hours, and that's a lot. And it's also asking a lot of viewers, because viewers don't know 90% of these people. I mean, even if they've seen the films, they don't know what sound mixers are, it's short subjects and all that kind of stuff. So I would like to see more film clips. But also, I think that what they did was talking to people about films that influenced me. It was kind of a clever way of the Academy reminding of its heritage without being old-fashioned. It's like, look, here's our heritage, here's Hollywood history, and how it applies to people today. You know, Charlize Theron or Jimmy Kimmel, even in that joke segment, Javier Bardem. So you know, I liked that. I'd be happy to see a lot more film clips.
Good line from Shirley MacLaine, though, also about her age being in the thousands and so forth. I don't know how many people got that because she used to believe in reincarnation. But here's Robert who writes, he wanted to weigh in on this whole mess up at the end. He says, who cares about the screw up? Someone erred and made an uncomfortable moment for the two movies producers and for Mr. Beatty and Miss Dunaway. Mr. Beatty was handed the wrong envelope. It's not emblematic of anything.
Well, so we had real drama on the show. I mean, it's usually short on drama. This was like a really dramatic moment.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think any grave harm was done. No, I mean, really, we have to get real.
It was
here.
Just awkward, I think,
awkward.
More than anything.
But also,
else,
I mean, just emotionally, I think it was really hard on both those groups of people who worked really
hard. Well, you think all those people came up from La La Land and they had to just vacate the stage. Let me go to more of your calls here. Richard joins us next. Richard, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Good morning, Michael, and your cast as well as your guest. I was really excited for Casey Affleck, and he seems to be. I wasn't familiar with those sexual harassment charges, but maybe I just didn't pay attention. But certainly, I thought that was one of the most heart-wrenching performances I had seen all year. And I've gone to quite a few movies, and as I told Susan, who talked to me before I'm talking to you, is that some of these films, and I'm up in Sonoma County, so we have a couple of independent theaters there, the Rialto and the Summerfield. And La La Land really stuck around for quite a while. And Moonlight had a very short span there, and a number of other different films. They came and went. 20th Century Woman, I think, was there 2 weeks. And Annette Bening's role was fabulous. And what a great supporting cast of younger actors that were alongside of her. So that may have been another one of the publicity methods by which La La Land probably got so much of its notoriety, but and I'm sorry that I did not see Moonlight, but I will see it sometime. So anyway, that's my point. And again, Casey Affleck, I was so moved by that. That was a box of Kleenex, that film. So.
Well, you know, Kenneth Lonergan, when he went up and got the award for the Oscar for best adapted screenplay or best original screenplay, he said Casey Affleck. I mean, he he credited Casey Affleck as being the real reason behind the success of Manchester by the Sea.
This is a really tough question about conflating biography with work. I think, Michael, you and I have discussed this on the show at other times. I mean, the walls of our museums would be empty or depleted if we didn't allow works hung, if you could only hang works by really good people. So, I mean, it's a tough one. It's a tough call. But it's bad publicity, and sometimes that can affect the voting. So I think there might have been some sense that would have hurt him. I mean, I agree that he gave a really moving performance. There's a kind of weight and heaviness and rage underneath grief that I thought he communicated beautifully.
And Claudia, here's the listener, says, why wasn't the lead actor in Loving nominated? Was he even there last night? The lead actress was nominated, but there was no mention of Joel Edgerton, yet his role was bigger.
Absolutely. I thought he was deserving, very frankly. It was a very subtle role, though. I mean, both his and Ruth Negga's roles were very, because these were very quiet, kind of terse people, presumably, and they were playing them as, you know, the people that, as the actual loving couple, which, they weren't people who sought the limelight or who looked to be activists. They were just people who wanted to be in love and be married and you know, kind of ended up in this big Supreme Court case. So I think that I think Joel Edgerton's omission was kind of an omission. I think he was just a very subtle performance. That often is the case. You know, the showy performances, I think Denzel's was wonderful, but it was more of a theatrical performance. I mean, he performed that same role on Broadway, and you know, the film was arguably kind of just, you know, taking the theatrical production and putting it on film, which I understand he did in order to be as faithful as possible to August Wilson's work, which I completely respect and admire, but at the same time, is much showier performance. So I think, you know, you end up, I was very happy to see, in a way, Casey Affleck win because it was a much more subtle performance. And I think Joel Edgerton falls into the same category.
And here's a tweet from Pete, who says the Best Picture era was wonderful. One of the best Oscar moments of spontaneous grace, dignity, recognition, and humor ever. And let me bring another caller on here, and that's Art. Art, welcome.
Yes, thank you. Hi. After all the hype that I had been hearing about La La Land, I was excited to finally go to see it with friends, and I was quite frankly disappointed. I was looking, I'm an old school guy, and I was looking at for something that would be comparable to those made in the 50s with lots of splash and color and so forth. But I just wasn't impressed. And secondly, I'd like to say that I was disappointed that Hacksaw Ridge didn't get more because I really enjoyed that. I thought it had a lot to say about anti-war.
Thank you for those comments. Appreciate it.
Can I just say something about La La Land? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I just think that, I mean, to me it was a Jacques Demy wannabe film. I think it's been compared to Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and it suffers from that comparison. And also, to the caller's point.
Well, I've heard more arguments about that opening scene than I can even begin to tell you.
Do you remember Colma the musical? Do you
yes.
remember that was shot here? I mean, that had, I thought, more exuberance. It had, you know, obviously amateurish performances and was made for
no money. It was too tightly choreographed, I think we could agree. But also, I don't want to put a critical hat on here because, but you
are you talking about La La Land?
Yeah, I'm talking about La La Land now. It was, it was pleasant, it was entertaining, and so forth. What I liked about it was what it did with the ending. I mean, just dramatically unusual and not expected, and true to life, verisimilitude kind of.
But wouldn't it have helped? And again, this is to the caller's point. I mean, if you had people who could really sing and dance, I mean, even last night, having John Legend sing that sort of, you know, middling song improved it.
Yeah, Claudia,
I was just going to say, I think that's an arguable point. I agree with most of what you're saying. But you think of Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which I think is an absolutely wonderful film, and I agree it's a better film than La La Land. And clearly he was paying homage to that film. But, you know, Catherine Deneuve couldn't really sing. And it was, I'm not sure that was absolutely the problem. The singing and dancing was, it was supposed to be these ordinary people singing and dancing. So that wasn't as big of an issue to me. I agree with you about the ending. I think the ending was probably one of the most powerful things. I actually kind of liked the beginning. My first reaction was sort of like, ooh, cringing. And then I kind of thought, oh, this is kind of fun. It was the middle. It was everything between the beginning and end. That was the problem.
Claudia, I was just going to say that what I was harking about was comparing it to musicals of the 50s, which the caller was talking about, where you had, you know, Astaire and Rodgers and people like that. So you did not have that in La La Land.
And let's read some more comments from listeners. Jane writes, I was upset that 13th didn't win Best Documentary. I wonder if it was partly because the content was harder for most people to take, that the effects of slavery continue in the present day as manifested in the mass incarceration of black men. Admittedly, I haven't seen the other documentaries, but I can't imagine they were as well done. And a listener writes, Hidden Figures was by far one of the best movies I've seen in a long time, a must-see. The odd thing is that the description of the movie in no way spoke to the quality of the movie. The acting, the critical role played by three amazing women, and the shameful history we all share, the promotion of the film may have sabotaged the movie and its chances.
Gosh, it was a little formulaic. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. I didn't think that I would be as pulled in as I was, and I agree about the performances. And I thought it made also a really excellent point that it's not enough to be smart. It's not enough to be good at a job. You have to really be able to put yourself forward. That's part of what success is about. I thought that was an interesting thing to take up in a film.
We were talking earlier with Tim Gray about campaigning, and Tim, I think, was it in your article you mentioned that story about Michael Caine?
I don't know. Which story about Michael Caine?
Well, let me see if I can activate your memory or just tell the way the story was told was that Michael Caine was up for an Academy Award. He was at a Hollywood party, and someone came up to him and said, you were brilliant in that role, and I'm voting for you. And then he heard the same remarks made by the same person to someone who was one of his competitors at a bar a little later. And he said, this taught me the lesson that I should have learned a long time ago about Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, the thing that I do find true with the overarching thing, this for me is one reason why the Oscars are fun, because, you know, taste is a very personal thing and people can argue about it. And ultimately, no matter who wins, it's not going to affect your taxes. It's not going to affect your school board. So it's like, you know, you can get heartbroken or thrilled, because I mean, for me, like Annette Bening in 20th Century Woman, she was okay, but I thought Taraji P. Henson was like better, and so, you know, we could argue this forever, but you know, so that's kind of the fun of it, is that there's no such thing as universal taste, because I did love 13th, the documentary, but also, I just think it was a great year for documentaries. I think any one of those five could have won.
Yeah, there were a couple that we featured on this program that did not win, that were made by local Bay Area filmmakers. We got seconds left. Who really should have won and didn't? Let me hear from each of you, Tim.
Personally, I loved the Martin Scorsese movie Silence, and that only got one nomination, so I would have been happy to see more attention to that one.
Claudia, who should have had more attention or should have won?
Barry Jenkins, the director, I think. He did an amazing job, and I would like to have seen him win over Damien Chazelle.
Sarah Wood?
I'm for Denzel. This is the Denzel Society here. I think he should have won over Casey Affleck.
Well, we'll let it rest with that, and thank you all so much. Thank you, Sarah Wood, freelance arts journalist and film critic, and thank you, Claudia Puig, president of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, and thank you, Tim Gray, features awards editor for Variety, and thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you, and we are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank those behind the scenes. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Susan Britton, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, and Howard Gelman's our engineer, and I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.